The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A US peace plan for Gaza has been welcomed by European and Middle East leaders. President Donald Trump has warned Hamas to accept it. Duncan Bullivan, special advisor to the head of the Bosnia peacekeeping mission of yore and CEO of the Henderson Group, an international risk management advisory, joins us now to go through that 20-point plan. Duncan, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you've read the plan, as have I, and it's probably too tedious to go through every detail in it. But the basic bones of it are Hamas disarm, hand over the hostages, and they start redeveloping Gaza, instantly start feeding people, trade prisoners and hostages and so on, and peace in our time.
It's as simple as that. What more needs to be discussed? It is an interesting document. It is a document that is quite expansive. It does put the onus on Hamas to make the first move in terms of release of hostages within 72 hours. It does have certain guarantees in there for the increase in aid and support, which should be welcomed. But it has received pretty qualified, but nonetheless, considerable support from Arab neighbors to the region, and so I think we should look at it. You know, it's a brave effort to end the current level of hostilities. Okay. Is it practical? Is it going to bring a lasting peace? I doubt it very much, and I don't think it's grounded in reality.
I think when you see how pleased Netanyahu looked last evening when this was announced, you worry. Because, you know, on his right, there are people who will not like this at all. So he appears to feel either that he can sell it to his extreme right or that he knows it won't last.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there's going to be a degree of cynicism from elements of the Israeli political arena who will look at this and just say, yeah, this gives us breathing space. This puts all the pressure on Hamas. It gives us an opportunity to reorganize. It gives us a pathway to actually ramping down the military campaign, which is not sustainable at the current levels for Israel.
Now, tease out some of the things. Point one, Gaza will be de-radicalized, a terror-free zone that does not pose a threat to its neighbors. Then Gaza will be redeveloped for the benefit of the people of Gaza who have suffered more than enough. And if both sides agree to this, the war will stop immediately and all military operations, including aerial and artillery bombardment, will be suspended. The battle lines will remain frozen until conditions are met for the complete staged withdrawal.
Yeah. And I think just to add to that point is there is this amnesty issue that's been woven into it as well, which is that for members of Hamas that wish to be repurposed as normal citizens, and they hand over their weapons and they agree to some sort of de-radicalization program, that they can sort of walk back into the community unscathed. Hamas has its tendrils in pretty much every aspect of society in Gaza, and the idea that there is this, and I think it's a false. And sadly, a false narrative, and it's probably become even falser over the last couple of months, is that somehow Hamas sits alongside the population. Yes, we know there are lots of citizens in Gaza who are disenchanted with Hamas, but their voice is rarely heard, and it's an extremely dangerous position to take. So I think this idea that somehow everybody is going to sort of, you know, say, right, that's enough, you know, let's just bury the hatchet and get on with life is fantasy, because I think people who have dreamt up this plan are not familiar enough with the visceral hatred that exists within the region, and particularly within Gaza, based on decades of loathing of Jews, and of course in the last 2 years they've got even bigger reasons to hate the Jews than they had even before October the 7th because of the bloodshed. And this current plan is a great idea. It's a great concept. It's something for everybody to get behind. and it may lead to a ceasefire. But the idea that Hamas are going to disappear into the woodwork and no longer play a part in the future of Gaza is fantasy.
Now, you did say something there. You said they detest Jews. Is it that they detest Israelis? People of the Jewish faith in Israel, because there are obviously there are Arabs in Israel as well. So is it that they hate the Israeli state? I mean, is there any space for, you know, a religious détente?
I don't think so. I'm not being controversial in saying this. The idea that there is a sophisticated delineation in the mindset of the majority of Gazans, that somehow Israelis, you know, the IDF bad but Israelis good, or that it's not a Jewish issue, is avoiding the issue. And if we avoid the issue, we can't come up with a solution. So this is going to take a long time to peel back. This doesn't get fixed in the next few weeks. This gets fixed over 30, 40 years and maybe three or four generations, if it's fixed at all, because these hatreds go back a long, long way. But I think that the point about this plan, this Trump-inspired plan, his plan, it's not a bad effort. It's not a bad effort, but it requires... It requires you to control elements who do not want to be controlled. Yeah. And of course, you know, Hamas are survivors. They've survived thus 2 years they've been fighting that. And the idea that they're just going to hand over authority and say, well, that's it, we'll throw in the towel. Thanks, guys.
Now, they've offered members of Hamas who wish to remain Hamas and do what they do, but who want to leave Gaza will be provided safe passage to receiving countries. And you've got to ask yourself, which countries would want active Hamas representatives coming to their shores?
Indeed. Of course, this is exactly what happened with the PLO in the 70s. You know, the PLO were given safe passage from the region, and many ended up in North Africa, and of course carried on the campaign against Israel. And I think that, you know, there's an element of, oh, that's, you know, that's just do what we did back then. But who's going to take any Hamas operator? Nobody in the region wants them, and I think that, you know, there are only people that would take them and give them a safe haven are probably bad actors that you don't want involved in the process. This is not the PLO. This is a different animal. And I think the other thing to remember is that Hamas isn't just about Israel and isn't just about Jews. Hamas is a fundamentally anti-Western jihadist organization. They're not going to carry on their campaign, you know, in a Western environment where they can go and be housed and looked after and then just focus on Israel. They have a much broader and a much more sinister ideology than just the liberation of Palestinians in Israel. Yeah.
Now, if there's a carrot and stick, the carrot for people living in Gaza is the following, paragraph 7. Upon acceptance of this agreement, full aid will be immediately sent to the Gaza Strip. At a minimum, aid quantities will be consistent with what was included in the 19th of January 2025 agreement regarding humanitarian aid, including rehabilitation of infrastructure, water, electricity, sewage, rehabilitation of hospitals and bakeries, and entry of necessary equipment to remove rubble and open roads. Now, of course, this was the Biden agreement, if you like. Those kind of conditions existed there. But the point I'm going to make here is about UNRWA. I mean, we know that Netanyahu has set his face against UNRWA, and yet this agreement seems to allow for UNRWA to deliver aid.
Yes, well, I think this agreement would look at using multiple mechanisms for delivering aid. And if I may sound one note of caution here, is that it is pretty cynical to have this as a conditionality. I would argue that this humanitarian element should be the highest priority today, regardless of a peace agreement. It shouldn't be a bargaining chip. This is not something that should be used as a bargaining chip, because it takes us into very dangerous territory. Is that sign this agreement and we'll feed you. Sign this agreement, we'll turn the water back on. That's straying into very, very sinister areas. And I don't think anybody with experience in these issues would would see this as something that should be part of a deal. This should be something that all parties are working towards now.
Yeah. It's very interesting the way the wording is. It's almost as if, you know, there's a Harry Potter wand that they can wave, because paragraph 8 says, entry of distribution and aid in the Gaza Strip will proceed without interference from the two parties, in other words, Hamas and Israel, through the United Nations and its agencies and the Red Crescent, in addition to other international institutions. You know, it's let it be. It'll happen. That's not the way the world works.
No, it's not grounded in reality, and it's certainly not grounded in the reality that is Gaza today. But it's a nice idea, and it's something to we've got to start somewhere, I guess. Mm. And if this agreement leads to a ceasefire and a release of hostages and a release of prisoners from Israel and a chance for everybody to gather breath and see where it goes, that's a positive. But I'm afraid. It you know, we can go through the points of this agreement one by one, but some of them are just beyond the pale, to be honest with you.
Now, I want to go to point 9. Gaza will be governed under the temporary transitional governance of a technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee responsible for delivering the day-to-day running of public services and municipalities, what's left of them, indeed, for Gaza. And this committee will be made up of qualified Palestinians and international experts with oversight and supervision by a new international transitional body, the Board of Peace, also the reason I get the Peace Prize, the Board of Peace, which will be headed and chaired by President Donald J. Trump, and others included will be former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, who has already welcomed the plan as bold and intelligent. And I'm wondering, is this Tony Blair's act of repentance for Gulf War II?
You've read my mind. Yes, I think the Board of Peace, which sounds like something from a low budget Hollywood movie, the Board of Peace would do well to consider a number of things. One is, you know, Sir Tony Blair has probably created more chaos than he's fixed in the world through his numerous policies, and I think that this is not an easy gig, and you can't run these programs. You can't be the leader of a process of reconstruction, de-radicalization, and security provision, living in London or living in Jerusalem. You've got to be on the ground, and I don't see that happening. And I think that the reality is that it's fine for the great powers, as were, to sit and pronounce these things and suggest who might be running things and getting them on the ground. But the reality is, as we've seen over numerous years, particularly in the Balkans, is that these sort of supranational entities immediately find themselves at odds with local politics. And the idea that there are enough competent Palestinians outside the Palestinian Authority, by the way, so they've been excluded from the process unless they've gone through a process of reform. Some of that reform, by the way, for the Palestinian Authority includes international standards, budgetary reform and transparency, and must show it is capable and committed to the demilitarization and disarmament of all factions. Yeah, dream on. You know, there are so many qualifications for who's going to be involved. So where are these qualified and competent Palestinians going to be coming from? And I don't say that in a pejorative sense. It's who are these people? Where are they? And the idea that you've got an international quango, which looks and feels like the great powers once again interfering in the region, as they did so at the end of the Ottoman Empire and other areas, it's not grounded in reality. The security requirement to get some form of international system on the ground to support this is going to be enormous. The peacekeeping operation here is going to have to be tens of thousands of troops coming from where we just don't know at this point.
And by the way, the interesting little note: the USA will train people. And they will equip them, train them to do this police work, but they won't be supplying American boots on the ground.
No, they won't. And I think actually what is happening here is that there may be people who are looking at Gaza a little bit like Kosovo in 1999-2000, where, you know, NATO and others moved into a benign environment with you know, the Serbs having left, and were able to sort of operate with it with impunity and stabilize the region. Don't forget, Gaza isn't just about Hamas. There are other jihadi groups knocking around, none of whom are necessarily going to sign up to this agreement, but most of whom are quite happy to carry on the conflict because it suits their purposes. The security bill's huge.
Do you believe that they might, the United States might fund mercenaries, you know, the so-called contractors, to go in there and do this job? Dangerous work, but well paid.
Oh, I mean, the training on the ground will be carried out by private contractors. There's no doubt about it, because that's US policy in these areas. There's no way that the United States government is going to put US soldiers at risk. And actually, you know, that's part of the sort of the Trump doctrine. So yes, it'll go to contractors, but it's not even Afghanistan. You know, this is a completely different environment. I think the Israelis will be sitting back looking at this saying, well, good luck. This seems like a great idea. It served our purpose because it isolates Hamas. It fundamentally isolates Hamas, because if Hamas say no to this deal, which they may well do, Hamas may just sees themselves being pushed further and further away from support from within the region. Hmm. The Saudis have given some sort of tacit agreement and said, it's not a bad idea, but we have to see the Palestinian state, the twin state approach come out of this. The US is not fully committed to that. The Netanyahu government certainly isn't committed to that. So I think that there are complexities, but, you know, cynicism apart, and cynicism, you know, and there is a degree of cynicism in terms of this agreement, it is a start, and it's better than nothing, and it's better than where we were 3 days ago. So let's just see what comes out of this. And if the hostages can be released and there's a ceasefire and food and medical support and aid can be got into at scale, that has got to be a good thing.
If we want to look at a couple of paragraphs finally and briefly, which really are almost too optimistic, an interfaith dialogue process will be established based on the values of tolerance and peaceful coexistence to try and change mindsets and narratives of Palestinians and Israelis by emphasizing the benefits that can be derived from peace. That's paragraph 18. And then the paragraph 20, the United States will establish a dialogue between Israel and the Palestinians to agree on a political horizon for peaceful and prosperous coexistence. Mom and apple pie.
Yeah, and it's quite insulting to the people of Israel. You know, many of those who were slaughtered on October the 7th had a very strong commitment to peace and prosperity with their Palestinian neighbours. And you know, that didn't really help. This is fantasy stuff, and it looks good on paper, and it sounds great. But the reality is that these guys have been hating each other for a long, long time. And the only way that this is the long term peaceful coexistence is going to be managed is with a rigid security system, an educational system in Gaza that doesn't preach and allow the preaching of hatred for the Jew and the Israelis, which is, I'm afraid, is what has been going on. And also the Israelis want reaching out and offering prosperity. But don't forget that the prosperity in Gaza and, the idea that Gaza was this dreadful place run down prior to the October the 7th, it's not true. Gaza was increasingly prosperous. And a lot of that prosperity was based on the fact that Gazans were allowed more and more access to go and work in Israel and to actually benefit from Israel's economic prosperity. And it perhaps wasn't going fast enough, but it was happening. So a lot of Israeli money was going into Gaza. The idea that you set the clock back now and say, well, that, you know, October the 7th didn't happen. It's going to take a generation for this to heal. And this requires a massive security presence. It's going to require considerable aid and reconstruction. But the idea that you start off with reconciliation, I'm going to say something a bit controversial now. It's BS. And it really has got to be seen for what it is. It bears no relation to reality, No post-conflict environment is ready for this stuff on day one. This is the stuff that comes later. And you do it through the schools, and you do it through business and trade. But the idea that you lecture Gazans or you lecture Israelis on peace, truth, and reconciliation is frankly insulting at this stage of the game.
Duncan Bullivan, CEO of the Henderson Risk Management Advisory, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.